Blog Talk Radio.
I don't think so.
You know there's more to this world than what you're told. Paranormal phenomenon, supernatural forces, government conspiracies, alien visitors. Step out of the world you see, open up your mind, and get ready for another round of strange at the Supernatural Radio Show with Corrine DeWinter and Nino Del Padre. Brought to you by PurplePlates.com for harmony, healing, and living energy products for a greater quality of life. Listen up, world. Here's Corrine and Nino.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Supernatural Radio. And we are actually live from Lizzie Borden's house, believe it or not. And I'm joined tonight by Sephra Jerome, who is a fantastic psychic and a card reader. And tell us a little bit about yourself, Sephra.
Hi, I've been a professional tarot reader for about 15 years. I'm starting to really do a lot of ghost hunting, and I'm also a horror novelist. With several books out.
And I might say they're fantastic books as well.
Oh, thank you so much.
And Sephra is going to be doing some readings. First, we're going to get into the Lizzie part of things, of course. And her and Lisa Medeni, who's also joining us shortly, are going to try to figure out exactly what happened here. They're going to try to contact Andrew Borden and Abby Borden and Lizzie herself. So you guys probably want to stick around, and we're going to just play this short little piece on Lizzie, and we will be right back.
Lizzie Borden. Fall River, Massachusetts, the New England town on the border with Rhode Island, has inspired several books, a ballet, and a couple of masterly essays from the doyen of American true crime writing, Edmund Pearson. And it gave us the famous rhyme that everyone knows. Lizzie Borden took an axe and gave her mother 40 whacks, and when she saw what she had done, she gave her father 41. There are many varyingly persuasive theories setting out who really did it. It's still a mystery, but this is what Edmund Pearson and the good people of Fall River said after the trial. Andrew Borden was a successful, dour, parsimonious businessman in the late 19th century New England mode. He had interests in many ventures in Fall River, and in the world of trade and commerce his name was good. He was of a poor background, enterprising, what the Thatcher government used to call a self-starter or one of us. At home, he was a ghastly example of what middle and old age does to the successful Philistine materialist. He lived with his second wife and two grown-up daughters by his first marriage. The women of the family went to church, of course, but religion was not really important in their lives. The arts had no place whatsoever. The one interest turning the wheels of the household was making, hoarding, and cautiously spending money. Andrew Borden once said he had never in his life spent a dollar foolishly. Oh, they would have said, in traditional Protestant ethical terms, they were working hard and prospering. It was a joyless prosperity. They lived in an ugly two-story wooden frame house in the less fashionable part of town. Their furniture was ugly, horsehair stuffed. They kept one Irish maid. They positively reeked of the inability to have any fun and of a humorous incomprehension of those who did. It's a wonder they ever said grace, for the food served up in the Borden household was such a thrifty compilation of warmed over and reshaped leftovers of leftovers that it had usually been so frequently blessed it might as well have left for heaven then and there. The first week of August 1892 was the joint of mutton week. It appeared first as a hot joint. It reappeared as cold cuts, as mutton soup, and hashed in patties. It turned up at breakfast. The mutton on its own, somebody has said, might well have caused a murder. Miss Lizzie's older sister was away visiting friends and missed the excitement of the 4th of August. To compensate, Andrew Borden's brother-in-law, by his first marriage, John Vinicum Morse, the girl's uncle, was visiting. Bridget, the Irish maid, was feeling sick, as well she might, with the increasingly elderly mutton undergoing its endless resurrections. Mrs. Borden set her to clean the windows on the outside of the house. Bridget spent the morning labouring round the great wooden frame box with bucket and washcloth. Mrs. Abby Borden was a stout household drudge who had been pretty undisguisedly married by the miserly widowed Andrew as a needful piece of furniture to look after his daughters and his home comforts. She had equally undisguisedly married him for the security and income he represented. You can no more imagine love or romance between those two than you could between any two members of, shall we say, Mr. Brezhnev's old Supreme Soviets. Mrs. Borden's domestic tasks took her upstairs that morning in the front part of the house where she and Mr. Borden slept opposite the guest bedroom, quite apart from Miss Lizzie's room at the back of the house. Miss Lizzie, for some years, had not hidden her dislike of her stepmother, her feeling that her own daughterly financial inheritance was threatened by this interloper. Miss Lizzie lived her life to herself as much as the house permitted, and her father encouraged it, even blocking off bedroom doors with furniture so that people couldn't wander into each other's rooms. Uncle John Vinicum Morse had gone into town to visit friends. He seems to have been rather more sociable and human than his Borden relatives. Bridget washed windows. Miss Lizzie sat in her room at the back of the house doing whatever Miss Lizzie was doing. Around midday, Mr. Borden came home. He had visited his various enterprises and grimly made sure that the wheels of commerce were revolving in his favour. Miss Lizzie came downstairs, and her father asked where his wife was. Miss Lizzie said she'd gone out to visit a sick neighbour. Miss Lizzie didn't know who or where. Andrew made little response, though he probably felt his women folk should be available to serve him, not gadding about serving God or humanity. He took off his coat and put his feet up on the uncomfortable sofa in the dining room to enjoy 40 winks before lunch. Bridget had finished the windows and gone to her room to lie down. Miss Lizzie was wherever Miss Lizzie was. About 20 minutes later, she called out to Bridget for help. Someone had come in and killed Mr. Borden. He lay on the sofa, dreadfully battered by an axe. Bridget had heard nothing. Miss Lizzie had heard nothing. But the door in from the garden had been ajar, with only the insect screen door across. Evidently, some strange enemy had intruded. Neighbours came in answer to the calls for help and found Bridget panicky. Miss Lizzie, perhaps shocked, undetermined about what to do, yet curiously self-possessed. Still, nobody expected paroxysms of grief from a Borden. Some neighbours set off to look for Mrs. Abby Borden on her charitable errand. Miss Lizzie didn't know exactly where. Others sent for the police. Two courageous souls went up the front stairs. Miss Lizzie's courage failed her at that point, and she would not accompany them. As their heads ascended above the landing floor level, if they turned and looked over their shoulders to the left, they could glance through the open door of the guest bedroom, and there they saw poor stout Mrs. Abby Borden lying battered on the floor between the bed and the wall. The famous rhyme is quite wrong about at least one thing. Mrs. Borden was struck more often and with greater savagery than her husband. Now, here was a mystery. Who on earth could have done it? Uncle John Vinicum Morse arrived home and proved himself a truly cool member of a thoroughly respectable New England family. He paid no attention to the knot of bystanders outside the house, went round to the back, quietly entered the garden on his own, picked a windfall pear, and ate it. Suspicion fell on him for this strangely uncurious behaviour. But Uncle John had witnesses to prove exactly where he'd been ever since he arrived at the relatives he visited that morning, and he was definitely never in or near the house at the time when the murders took place. Suspicion had to go away again. After a few days, it settled on Miss Lizzie. She'd been in or around the house all morning, and she gave inadequate and self-contradictory explanations of what she'd been doing. She'd suddenly changed from the blue dress she was wearing when Andrew came home for lunch into a brown dress. And a few days later, she had been seen burning a blue dress in the basement boiler. Wasn't this getting rid of blood-stained garments? It got rid of the close friend who saw her do it and who thereafter believed Miss Lizzie was getting rid of evidence. In the basement, the police found a hatchet which they believed could have been the murder weapon. Something like a bloodstain remained on the blade, but it had recently been scrubbed clean with ashes. Nobody admitted to carrying out this scouring. Subsequent tests proved that it couldn't have been the murder weapon, which has never been seen. After a lot of hesitation, Miss Lizzie was finally charged with murdering her father and stepmother. She then told an improbable story which should have hanged her on the spot. She said that while the assailant crept into the house, she had been up in the loft over the Borden's barn in the garden. She'd been looking for, well, first she said a piece of iron to frame a window. Then she said pieces of lead to make sinkers for fishing at the church picnic the next weekend. Core. That was an obvious whopper. None of the gentlefolk of Fall River had ever heard of either of the Borden girls fishing, let alone on church picnics. Nobody since Lizzie Borden has waited their lines with lumps of iron, which was one of her suggestions, rather than split lead shot. And anyway, there was hardly any iron in the loft. One police search of the premises suggested that there was an unbroken carpet of dust that must have lain building up over months, untrodden by anyone. This was contradicted by boys, who said they went in the loft and trod over it before the police got there. The police searched the house, and their immediate search helped Miss Lizzie in the matter of the blue dress. They had examined all the clothes and all the cupboards in the house, including Miss Lizzie's, and they failed to detect a trace of blood-stained clothing. It took Miss Victoria Lincoln, a Fall River lady and the first woman to write on the case, to point out that she would always know exactly how to conceal a dress from prying masculine eyes. Simply put it on a hanger inside another one. But when it came to trial, Lizzie was helped most of all by her chief trial lawyer. Ex-Governor Robinson was a highly respected Massachusetts politician. With controlled New England courtesy, he simply treated it as impossible that a lady could have done such a thing. "Look at her, gentlemen," he implored the jury. The jury did. They considered the town's reputation. They found her not guilty. But the townsfolk knew Lizzie had quarrelled with her family over her stepmother's inheriting property from Andrew Borden's hoard. They also knew she had tried to buy prussic acid earlier that month. They were quite sure that she was actually guilty. They kept it discreetly in the Fall River family, however. For the next generation, they simply forbade their children to speak to Miss Lizzie for the remainder of her life. Why? Their genteelly understated ground was that she was rather unkind to her parents, dear.
And that was just a brief synopsis of what happened in the Lizzie Borden house, which we are currently broadcasting from. I am joined by a bevy of wonderful dark writers, sometimes called horror writers. And I mentioned Lisa Minetti, and there's Dennis Cummins. There is Elizabeth Blue, and they've each had interesting experiences in this house. I'm going to let you hear from Elizabeth right now, and she's going to tell you what happened to her. Now, I was with Beth the first year, well, when this happened, I believe, and Beth, we were doing a seance at the time, I believe. Is that the incident that you want to talk about?
That was the first incident.
What, do you remember what happened exactly?
It's kind of funny. It was actually a cat that got in my lap.
Ooh!
The cat sat in my lap, and in the dining room afterwards, the cat would rub itself and wind itself around my ankle.
Mm-hmm. Go on.
Right after that, actually, in the bathroom downstairs, the first time I went into that bathroom, as soon as I walked in, there was a sound up against the outside window that sounded like somebody was throwing rice at it or sleet or something like that. So I ran right out.
Well, what caused the sound, do you think?
I have no idea. It wasn't raining. It wasn't windy. It was just, you know, a nice, calm evening.
Okay. Were there any other incidents that happened that you think are noteworthy?
The mannequin moving around in Emma's bedroom was pretty noteworthy.
Well, I'd say, Jesus, what happened with that?
It turned around. Scared the heck out of me.
So did you, and you got the hell out of here, right?
Yeah, I couldn't sleep alone that night.
Well, tell me what happened exactly.
I was trying to get comfortable in the bed, and it started, at first I thought it was my imagination because, you know, it was my first time here, so I thought I was dreaming it up. I kept looking, and I looked for 5 more minutes, and it had made about a quarter turn on its own, and that's when I was like, I'm out of here too.
Who else was with you when this happened?
That would be Lisa Minetti.
Lisa, can you tell us what happened during that? And Lisa is actually going to be one of our readers tonight, and as I said, her and Sephra are going to try to determine what is up with the real mystery of Lizzie Borden, and they're, as I said, they're going to contact, hopefully, Andrew and Abby Borden and Lizzie herself. Lisa, I know something really special happened with you. Tell us what happened here in Lizzie Borden's house.
Well, there was another incident with the mannequin, which was that we were on the tour. There's always a historic tour where they take you through the house. And all of us, everyone was up on a tour. There was no one separate. As we were going on the tour, the mannequin in Emma's bedroom, which is actually a dressmaker's dummy, by the way, moved around several turns, moved about a foot and a half. And during that evening, another young woman was staying in Emma's room, and another friend of ours took the mannequin because it kept squeaking, much the same that happened with Beth. And she put it out in the hallway and faced it towards the wall. And about 4 o'clock in the morning, we were in Lizzie's room. It's about maybe 15 feet away. And we actually heard the mannequin spinning around and slowly edging towards the door. And no one was awake. We were the only ones. All the other doors were shut. And in the morning, it was verified when we had the nerve to actually get up and look. After it was dawn and the lights were there. And we could see that it had moved about 2 feet at least away from the wall.
Oh, God.
And the floor is not tilted in any way, so it didn't just inadvertently roll out of place. And it also spun around completely. So there's no way that could happen without it moving under its own steam.
Right. And I know, like Lisa, you had actually a more personal experience after you left this house. Now, Lisa is like a lot of us, not a lot of us, she's nothing like us, but I mean... We come here, you know, in fact, Lizzie's birthday was this past Friday, And we usually come here every year at this time and spend the night, all of us together. And so, you know, there's been many experiences. And but Lisa, there was one incident when you left the house.
Yes.
Can you tell us that?
Yeah, there was one evening, the very first time I came with Stephen King's assistant, so I kind of then dragged everybody else along with us after that, year after year. But there was one incident when Sephora and I went into the cellar, which had not been renovated at that time, and we took each a little piece of brick, about the size of a postage stamp, and there's a Ouija board down there. So initially we thought we'd try to contact something through the Ouija board, but too many incidents were happening with lights flickering and all kinds of things, and we decided not to do it. At the same time, we were afraid to return to the basement and put these little pieces of brick back. So I left them on a bookshelf because they weren't dirty or they weren't messy. They're just four little pieces, like I said, each the size of a small postage stamp.
Right.
And when I got home, one piece was actually in my purse and came with me. And then what happened was I was in my office, which is on the second floor of my house, and I could clearly hear someone outside calling me, saying, "Lisa, Lisa," and there was no one on my front porch, there was no one on my back porch, there was no one in my driveway, no one around. And the piece of brick actually became quite warm, like maybe over 100 degrees, just even sitting on my desk.
Wow. Now, so, all right. So did you think to yourself, why did I take this?
I didn't take it. I knew I hadn't taken it. It actually somehow just went into my purse, which I had been carrying with me pretty much all evening. And somehow it went into my purse and came home with me. And it made me so nervous, I actually brought it out to the back garden. I was crazy in the house.
Yeah, no kidding,
and
right?
I also did psychometry on it and saw some very interesting things. I've been trained in that, you know, among other things. And I noticed when I did the psychometry that I had this image of Lizzie that she had wanted to sort of tell people towards the end of her life.
Oh, yeah.
And explain about what happened with the murders. But the funny thing was, I kept seeing her with a hood on. And it wasn't until after I had that image that someone told me that there was always a potential, people feel, that Lizzie was a victim of incest, that incest victims frequently picture themselves wearing dark hoods.
Wow.
So that was really kind of an incredible experience.
I say, Lisa, you know, you are something of a Lizzie expert. What do you think happened?
Well, I do think that she did kill her parents. That's my personal opinion. I do believe it. I really think that that day she was very, very angry at Abby. She never called mother from about 5 years previous to that. She only calls her Mrs. Borden. And I think that she had the year before there had been a robbery of some small jewelry in what was called Emma's closet, a small room off the Borden's bedroom. And Andrew Borden actually stopped the investigation because I think he was aware that Lizzie had perpetrated it. Supposedly this minor robbery actually happened in broad daylight with everyone home. But I believe that day she was intending to murder Abby because the property was... The farm that she and Emma had loved when they were children was going to be given to Abby. And, you know, Andrew was getting up in years, and I really believe she fully intended to murder Abby. And what happened was that because Andrew was ill, he came home, you know, man was very, very rigid in his habit. He normally wasn't home before noon, and because it was very hot and he was, you know, sick to his stomach, he came home about 10:30. And I also think that she was trying to get Bridget Sullivan out of the house. And that's why she was telling, to give Bridget an excuse as well. And that's why I think she was telling Bridget, oh, there's going to be, you know, a cheap sale of goods. In other words, that's what it was called at that time. It meant that yardage for fabric was going to be on sale. So she was trying to encourage Bridget to be out of the house. And she was also trying to get out and go downtown and be out of the house so that the suspicion would not fall on her. But once Abby was murdered and Andrew came home so early, she knew that he would know, and it was not going to be something he overlooked at this time, and she would be caught flat out. And I believe that's really why she murdered Andrew.
Okay, so she's upstairs, her father, and she has just murdered her mother with actually how many? 19 to the mother, 19 blows. And her father comes home, surprising her.
Right.
She goes downstairs, and what happens?
She lets him in, and, you know, goes and he lays down on the sofa, which she was a little bit too tall for, even. And, you know, the rooms were fairly cramped in the sense that part of the sofa kind of stuck into the doorway to the dining room. And, you know, he kind of fell off asleep in that. Another thing that's interesting about that, too, is that they found he wore what was called the Prince Albert coat, and he was meticulous about, you know, pressing bills, you know, having to pay for anything like that.
Right.
He would always have hung his coat on a peg in the hallway. But they found it wadded up under his head. So what are the chances that Andrew, who was peddling eggs for a penny apiece, was going to let that happen?
No way. So do you think she did that?
Yeah, I think I still think, even though people say that they can't raise their arms when they wore the coat backwards, that's exactly what she did. She put the coat on backwards because it was long. It would have been, and he was quite tall now.
Mm-hmm.
So don't forget, clothes at that time were pretty much custom made. There wasn't too much off the rack. And I think she absolutely put it on backwards. And when it was all spattered with blood, she just shoved it right down under his head.
Wow. Yeah, that was a little. But you do believe that she was the one who.
She alone. I don't think anybody else was involved in it.
Wow.
For somebody else to be involved in that murder, because again, there's many conflicting theories. So, but this is my, from all the research I've done, this is what I personally feel. The only place, because of the way the doors were all locked off and the way that you can't go from certain parts of the house, the only place someone could have hidden in that time without being encountered by either Bridget or by Lizzie was a very small broom closet by the front door. And I can't even imagine that somebody would be hiding in there for an hour and a half. That just defies belief.
Right.
And like I said, there would be no way for them to get to certain parts of the house without being seen. And I think as soon as Bridget went up to go lay down to take her nap, that's when, you know, she kind of cleaned up whatever she had to regarding herself, went next door and called, you know, the neighbor and said, you know, I believe father's been killed. And it's classic when someone murders someone that they let someone else discover the body. So she was okay with it about her father. It would be impossible because you can't be downstairs and not see that room. But she made the next door neighbor and Bridget come upstairs to find Abby. So that's classic evasion from someone who's, you know, committed a murder.
All
they
right.
almost never want to be the one to discover the body.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And as soon as they came up the stairs, of course, the door was open to the room, and you can actually see from the railing under the bed and could see the body lying there. So she was very visible from where she was.
Right. Now, we had a question from Richard in the chat room. I wonder if the whole event occurred when Mercury was in retrograde. We have no idea. I'm asking astrologer, psychic, Sephra right now, and she's not sure. She'd have to look that up. But very interesting question. You know, I wonder too, if it was in she got the death card. So mayhaps it was Mercury in retrograde.
Yeah, we have to go look that up in terms of.
And another great writer that is joining us tonight is Dennis Cummins. Now, Dennis was here when we were having the seance that Elizabeth Blue was referring to, where she felt the cat in her lap. Now, Dennis, can you tell us what, I mean, I remember sort of what you remember, but can you say, now we're in the midst of the seance, it's dark, it's very dark in the room, it's August, I think, or no, it was July, I'm sorry, very stifling in the room. What do you remember about that seance?
Well, it was dark, and the dining room is actually quite large, and the table inside there seats at least a dozen people, and I think we had at least a dozen or 13 people around that table that night. We had the lights out, and we had probably two or three candles on, and it was probably 15 minutes or so into this seance where the people on one side of the table saw this dark silhouette pop up from behind the people on the opposite side of the table and then shoot straight down to the other side of the other end of the table. We all jumped, and of course the seance ended for a little while. And then later on, after everybody settled down and we got back into the seance, the dark figure came up very slowly from the far end of the table where it disappeared. From behind those people, it came up very slowly and then went directly right down from where it came.
Now, I can attest to what Dennis is saying, because I was there at the seance, and, you know, even though the room was very dark, there's black, and then there's black. And this punctuation mark in the form of a spirit was moving. And we could all, or at least I could see it, Dennis could see it. It was actually, you know, now I know what they mean by shadow people. Now, this is like a shadow that is darker than anything, you know.
It was blacker than the night.
Darker than night.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
But it was quite clear to us. I mean, and then it just shot down the end of that table, you know. And we, of course, all the people on my side of the table who saw it go, we all jumped. And then, of course, the seance ended for a few minutes until we all settled down again.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and the thing is that Leanne, the owner, who we're going to have on here shortly, she owns the house. She's opened it as a bed and breakfast, of course. She's had so many incidents here that she won't actually sleep in that house anymore. She's built a bedroom in the barn outside. And I've just learned tonight, actually, for the first time, and actually Leanne didn't even know this, that one of the caretakers of the property, I won't name any names here, but they have actually invited the spirit of Andrew and Lizzie to their house. This, much to the husband's dismay, because when he found out, it was a little bit unsettling what happened. Now, as I said, I'm not gonna name any names here, but it's kind of strange, you know. Now, so Sephra and Lisa, as I mentioned, they are fantastic readers and also psychics and mediums. Now, they're going to pull some cards. We have actually a couple callers with questions. We're going to answer those. And if you guys have a question about Lizzie, please call in at 818-369-0327. Meanwhile, we're going to pick up area code 604.
Hello.
Hello there. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. That was really interesting to listen to the sandwich. Jeepers, you got a lot of details, huh?
Oh, yeah. Well, after you've been here a few years, you know, a lot of things have happened, you know, that are very interesting. Do you have a question for Lisa or Sephra?
I guess I'll just put it out there. There's my love life. It's driving me a little bananas. Love this man with all my heart. I'm pretty sure he loves me as much as well. So I'm just wondering, what's the holdup and what's good? And, well, I kind of know. I mean, my family, and he's got depression issues. But is he going to move through this and move forward, or am I the one that's in my own way?
Okay, Sephra is actually going to help you in just a second. And I just want to remind callers that we're actually focusing on Lizzie tonight. And so if you have questions concerning Lizzie, and we're going to actually do some readings like this at the end of the show. So Sephra's going to tell you what she came up with here.
Thank you.
I believe that he's very confused and he's not ready for a commitment. And unfortunately, it does seem like there is another interest. Not necessarily that anything's happening, but a curiosity he wants to discover.
Okay.
Does that make sense to you?
Well, I don't know. I don't know, but that's certainly possible.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you think, Lisa?
Interestingly enough, I do think you're right about a spirit of commitment, because the first card I pulled up was the marriage card, but in conjunction with Sephra's cards, because we never read the cards in isolation. So she pulled up a lot. I just pulled up one sort of as a clarification card, and it seems to be pointing to the confusion is about some kind of serious commitment. And that particular card that came up, which is the Three of Cups, is absolutely known as the marriage card. So I do feel that you've actually nailed it yourself, exactly what you said to us when you asked. His difficulty is making a commitment or feeling clear about marriage specifically.
Wow.
Okay,
caller, does that...
Thank you. Yeah, that's good. I appreciate it very much.
Sure, and thanks for calling in.
All right. I'd like to keep listening, so if you just mute me, that's awesome. I can carry on listening.
Sure. Thank you.
Okay.
The next caller we have is... The next caller we have is area code 571, and we're going to pick you up right now. Area code 571.
Hi, how are you? Good night. Thanks for taking my call.
I'm okay. How are you?
I am good, thank you.
Good. What can we do for you?
My question is about work. I am looking for work, and what do you see? What are the cards saying in regard to that?
All right, we're shuffling the cards here. We're going to take a look for you. Is indicated in the cards that there's definitely been a lot of upheavals and worrying, and you've certainly had a lot of challenges. You need to be strong. Now, the thing with the work idea, the first card that is coming up is the Four of Cups. Now, when the Four of Cups comes up, this is a card about opportunities being offered to you, but you may not be seeing them, or you may be ignoring them, or you may have come to such a state of apathy that you just don't care anymore. So with the Four of Cups comes up, it just means to really like open your heart, open your mind, and really be aware of all the opportunities and try not to turn down any sort of opportunities. Right on your heart, you do have the Fool, which means, again, open heart, open mind. The Fool is the first and last card of the tarot deck. And so this means that that's the overall card of your read, and so it means really this is a new time for you. The Tower card has shown up, so it is showing, you know, all the, you know, explosive things going on in your life right now. The Hanged Man is showing, you know, trying to change direction. Now, the crux of the situation, though, is that when the Hanged Man comes up, it's telling you you have choices to make, but you cannot make a wrong choice as long as you follow who you are. So in other words, don't let other people saying, oh, you should have this job, you should have that job, or whatever. You need to do what's best for you. And then everything will always work out as it needs to. So I would say the end result, I have the Four of Wands, which is a card about new beginnings. So you will be successful in your job hunt. And Lisa, add on what you...
Yeah, I've got sort of like the final overview here, and you've got the Seven of Pentacles reversed. So the difficulty with that is that, it's something being offered. So I'm seeing pretty much a recap of what Sephora got, which is that something is going to be offered, and you're indecisive about it and not sure how to approach it. And it also involves a somewhat of a length of time, because the Seven of Pentacles is almost always a card about like a hiatus or a gap. So it seems like you've got all these things spiraling around you, and it may take you some time to come to the correct decision, according to what Sephora also had mentioned to you about the Hangman and making the choices of following what's true to yourself. So don't be surprised if it takes you a while to come up with exactly what you need, but it is possible. Try to stay open. That's the most... this card reverse is clearly completely confirming what Sephora got.
Caller, does that help?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, thank you so much. That is great. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
And can you put me back in mute so I can just continue to listen?
Sure. Thank you so much for calling. Okay.
Thank you. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome. And, you know, you guys, do you want to start trying to read Lizzie and Andrew and Abby and see what we can come up with here?
let's try to find out exactly what happened on that night through a reading. Now, Kat Vecchione is in the chat room from Wacko World. Sounds like our kind of gal. I saw the Lizzie Borden movie with Elizabeth Montgomery. How close was this to the actual Lizzie Borden story life, according to your spirit guides? I've seen it before, but I'm not one of the readers. These guys haven't seen the movie before, so we're not really sure. I think that I have no idea. I don't know. But what's that, Lisa?
We're going to do, like, Abby first, and then,
Yeah, they're first going to do Abby.
Yeah. And then we'll do Andrew, and then we'll do Lizzie.
And then Andrew, and then Lizzie. And they're going to tell you what they're coming up with here. If you guys have a question, actually, we have another caller here. If any of the listeners have a question, the number to call in is 818-369-0327. Okay, area code 843. 843, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you? My name is Kimberly.
Hey, Kimberly, how you doing?
I'm great.
Good. What's happening?
Well, I am moving to Atlanta, Georgia, and I'm just wondering, I have a new job, a teaching job, and I was just wondering, out of this job, any advancement or any more prosperity coming by this move?
Well, actually, honey, they're in the middle of a reading about Abby and stuff, so can you actually stay on hold while they do this reading? Because they've got the cards all laid out. Okay.
Sure.
Right, I'm going to put you on hold, and then I'll pick you up, okay?
Sure.
Thank you. Okay.
All right, so we pulled some cards on Abby Borden, who was Lizzie's stepmother that she wasn't too fond of. What is very interesting is I pulled 7 cards for a chakra read, and Lisa has pulled 1 card as sort of a clarification card, and we both pulled the same card. Lisa's card is the 3 of Wands, and I have the 3 of Wands in the sexual chakra, which is also growth, relationships, and so on, yet my 3 of Wands is upside down. So what I'm finding very interesting in the cards that I'm looking at, because, we weren't really asking a specific question. We're kind of doing an overview of the energies. And earlier, people were talking about suspicions about who killed Abby and so on. It's very clear to me in this particular read, which is interesting because I've had much murkier reads in this house the many times I've been here. I would say definitely Lizzie did do it. And she was jealous of, the relationship between the father and mother.
Yes.
The family history, it was just so repetitive, it just kept going. And she just went crazy with, the garbage of, the situation. So she finally took matters into her own hand. But I find it very intriguing that there's an Ace of Wands on her heart chakra, which I'm seeing in my mind is the Axe. And it's aimed right at the Empress, which is the mother image. And then the end card is the self-made, the wealthy young lady, So it's quite an intriguing read. We have the 6 of Wands with, victory. So, this is quite interesting to me. What do you think, Lisa?
Yeah,
I'm actually quite excited about this read.
No, if you guys looked at the pictures on the spread that she did, it's kind of amazing, And, Lisa, what do you think?
No, I absolutely agree, and I'm looking at Zephyr's cards, and they perfectly align with mine. It's very interesting that she got the 3 of Wands, which is sort of a sense of community reversed, and I have it right side up. So, and of course, you are talking about, we're doing readings, the 3 principal people that were involved in this, which would be Lizzie, of course, and her mother, stepmother and father. So the overview of it is that these were the people that were involved, specifically those people and no others.
Right, right. Now, so the card that was the clarification card?
It's the 3 of Wands.
Okay, and you both pulled that card.
Yes.
Sephra's was upside down,
yes,
and yours was right side up.
Yes.
What is it about that card that tells you something about this?
It's the interpretation of the card itself and the position. And also, don't forget, Sephra's reading from a slightly different perspective because she's reading all of these individual chakra energies. I'm just doing an overview, sort of as she said, as Sephra mentioned, a clarification of all of the reading. So it's like a culmination. It's not even related to the culmination. It's a clarification and like a signpost for us. And it's obvious that she and I, which has happened many times too, we're frequently very, very much in sync when we read. In fact, one time when we were here and we were doing readings, we were on the opposite side of the room, and there were people walking back and forth between what she was reading and I was reading. And unbeknownst to myself or Sephra, we were pulling the exact same cards at the exact same time.
Wow.
We're good psychically together.
That's pretty cool. And so, Sephra, I mean, how do you read? Like, if somebody was going to go to you to get a reading, what do you do exactly? I mean, that's, you know, say, different than other psychics and readers.
I'm not sure how I think every psychic and reader has their own style. One of my favorite reads to do is the chakra read. That's one I've been kind of hooked on for the last few years. I find it, you know, because you can, as Lisa said, generate the energies in the chakra. So I do several types of spreads. I find that, you know, if I'm doing hour-long reads for people, you know, you have lots of time to kind of play with ideas. But if you're doing small readings for people, I really prefer them to have specific question, even if it's just like, what is my love life, or things like that, to pick kind of a topic. I don't like to upset people. So when I see negative news, I do try to put a positive spin on it, but I'm not lying about it. However, you know, most people do want the nasty truth, and I'm quite willing to give it to them.
I really read only for friends these days. I don't do any kind of client work, but I can certainly attest that Sephra's extremely accurate.
Yes, and I can attest to that as well. I mean, the first year, actually, Sephra, when you gave me the reading, it was me and my boyfriend, she gave us a reading, and it all came out. Fortunately, it was a good reading. Now, if you guys have both encountered the dark side. If someone's calling you to get a reading, what do you do? I mean, do you meet some people and you see, like, this awful black cloud over them because they've just done evil things? I mean, has it ever happened to you?
No, I really, I've actually known people who have, you know, walked into a psychic, oh, you have the black cloud, I need $200 to remove, clean your aura, and all that. I don't do any of that stuff. You know, people are people. We make our choices. We all have choice. And even if you get a tarot reading, it's a signpost, guideline, indication of what could possibly happen if you stay doing the things you're doing as you're doing them now. If you do not like your tarot reading, then change your behavior, change your attitude, change your circumstance, and you can change your life. We all have free will, and that's what I firmly believe. Now, I know there's a lot of tarot readers who say that, you know, it is what it is, and nothing can change. But I do believe that we ask questions for a reason. We are drawn to get a reading at a specific time for a reason. And so you need to listen to the answers that you're being given and decide if this is the path you want or not. And you can choose, you know, whether to transform your behavior or not.
Now, do you help people with that? If somebody comes to you and says, well, what do I do about this future that you're telling me might not be good? Do you help people with that?
Oh, for sure. I can certainly help people. You know, I do have a psychology background, and, you know, the tarot is, you know, it's a people thing, and I've been doing it for so long that, you know, I really, you know, don't want to just crush people's dreams and kick them out the door. I really want them to, you know, feel good about themselves and that there's hope in life. And even, you know, if they got the devil in the tower and the four swords and the three, you know, all this stuff, you know, there you can still turn it around. There's still good and evil in every card, just like there's good and evil in every person.
Right, right. And I have posted Sephra's information on the show page. And Sephra, do you want to tell people how to contact you, just in case they're not listening or they're not looking at the show page right now?
You can certainly my major tarot page would be taropaths.blogspot.ca. So that's tarot, T-A-R-O-T, paths, P as in Peter, A-T-H-S, dot blogspot.ca.
Okay.
That's one C. I'm just stuttering.
Right, and take advantage of Sephora's prices right now, because they will undoubtedly go up as people understand how fantastic she is of a reader. So check it out, you guys. Okay, so you guys are doing which?
Andrew next.
Andrew.
We're getting very strong. Both of us are getting very strong psychic vibes about Andrew and Lizzie wanting to come through.
Oh, shit. Okay. So what are you feeling? Like, what do you think? We're actually, what room are we in right now, you guys, in the house?
We're actually in Andrew and Abby's bedroom.
Okay, we're in Andrew and Abby's bedroom, as Lisa said. And if you were in this house, you can probably see in pictures, there are flowers all over the wall, it's very flowery and, you know, decorated much like it was back in the day, so it's kind of interesting, although the flowers do make you a little dizzy after a while. But we're going to have another guest up here talking about her experience, too. But let these guys, so you guys talk a little bit about what you're feeling and what you're trying to pull now for cards, I mean, what you're doing.
Well, both Zephyr and I have been experiencing extreme nausea since we came in this evening. And Zephyr, I believe you also had a very terrible headache. Did you mention that?
No, I've had the nausea. I think someone else had the headache. I can't remember.
So sometimes the aura here is stronger than others. But for sure, tonight, we independently, we both felt it. And I actually confirmed it with Zephyr. I said, are you feeling anything tonight? And she said, yes. I'm very nauseated. And she said, so am I. It's not the result of anything except we pick up the impressions of what's going on. So I would say it's a good chance tonight that the house is active, which means some of the guests might experience some interesting things.
Yep. We're almost at the full moon, and as we approach the full moon, spirit does get more active.
Right, right. Actually, the moon is pretty, it looks pretty full, but you said a couple of days, right?
Yeah, I think it's tomorrow.
Okay. Yes, as we said,
Andrew.
We're in Andrew and Abby's bedroom right now at the Lizzie Borden house. And Lisa and Sephra are pulling the cards.
There are some pictures. There are some pictures, too, of the house and some of our psychic experiences on my website, which hasn't been updated in a while, so it might look a little odd on your computer, but if you sift through it, you'll see the pictures. And that would be at www.thechancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancerychancer section. So just go there and knock yourself out.
Yeah, actually, there is a lot of really good photographs on that site. The Chancery House, the Chancery House, H-O-U-S-E, .com, ChanceryHouse.com. And we actually have a couple more guests, as I said, coming up. And I am introducing my friend Gardner. And Gardner, last year was your first year, right?
Here at the house, yes. Last year was my first year at the Libby Gordon House, and it was quite an interesting experience, that's for darn sure. First of all, having the opportunity to come in here after you've heard so much and then realizing that you don't know hardly anything of what really happened is the first thing you realize. Then you realize, you know, you're walking through a crime scene. There are photographs of the people who were bludgeoned to death in extremely violent ways. And you learn some things here that make you start to think, you know, I really think that whoever perpetrated these crimes, first of all, clearly hated Lizzie Borden's stepmother, hit her 19 times, I mean, just pulverized her skull, and, you know, it was beyond hatred. You know, this was a frenzied hateful kill. But what's interesting is, you know, you take the tour and you learn certain things about how the person who committed the crime killed the mother first, the stepmother, the woman who married
Abby.
And then you find out that based on Massachusetts law, if Mr. Borden had been killed first, then the inheritance would have been passed on to his estate would have been passed on to her family if she was killed second. It wouldn't have been passed on to the daughters of Mr. Borden. So she's killed first, and then approximately an hour and a half later, he's killed. So she's killed. Anything that cuts her out.
Mm-hmm.
Anything regarding the will.
Right.
She's done. Then he's killed. So everything moves on to the daughters.
I would like to say, while you're telling this fascinating story, the K2 meter is blinking.
Oh God.
Wow. And just to let whoever is perhaps listening on the, you know, out there in the spiritual realm, I'm just repeating what I heard. So I don't know whether this is true, and I don't want to make any false accusations.
I'm seeing it blink.
Okay, very good. So then you move from the crime scene into your own personal feelings of being amongst a crime scene like this, and you know that tragic things happened here, and you can't know all the information.
Mm-hmm.
You can't try to blame one person or the other. Lizzie was found not guilty.
Mm-hmm.
They never blamed anybody. So if you believe in any sort of spiritual realm, then you say to yourself, well, I don't want to be reckless here, especially if I'm going to be sleeping here tonight. Now, I have, and you know, it's interesting because if you think about a physical threat entering your home, then, you know, you can kind of figure, well, if I'm at the far corner of the house, away from the doors, then all the other people who are out there in front of me, they'll get knocked out first. They're the fodder. I'm safe, you know? So you pick the furthest corner from the door. But in a place like this, the spirits could go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not really safe.
Right.
So having company doesn't necessarily reassure me here. I mean, if it were, you know, a physical murderer, you guys would all be done. I'm driving home tomorrow. I'm fine. I'll see you at the funeral. I'll identify your body later. But it's a really weird experience. It's weird.
I know. We're just going to go on a short break right now, and actually Gardner's going to stick around. And Sephra and Lisa are going to tell you what they got for Andrew. Okay, cool. We'll be right back, you guys.
Welcome back. I'm Gardner Goldsmith, just sitting in here at the Lizzie Borden House. It's the Borden House, which was eventually inherited by Lizzie and her sister in Fall River, Massachusetts. Sepper is with me once more. Two folks have gone away, but they will be back, hopefully without any injuries. And Sepper, just I mentioned to you as we were taking our break, sort of wanted to get a vibe for what you've been doing here while I've been in the other room learning about things. And you can tell the audience and so on what you've been experiencing. You've been pulling cards, in this case, for Andrew, is that correct?
Yes. What's interesting to me is every time I come to this house, I always feel the energy of Andrew Borden, and I always stay in his room. Partly it's that whole thing, you know, if you know where someone is, you know, because I know he's going to hunt me down. So I just hang out here in his room. And what's very fascinating to me are the cards that we picked this time. For instance, the cards are revealing with Andrew that it's very hard to just talk about Andrew when he's in the room with you. So bear with me as I try to speak carefully about what the cards are revealing, because he's here. I can feel him, and he's touching me. So. Yes, I get a lot of things in the Lizzie Borden house. Anyway, so the cards are indicating, you know, the marriage to the stepmother, the hanging on to the money, the you know, the very a lot of concern about the money, you know, but being hardworking, the investments he's waiting to have paid off. You know, he thought he was running everything properly as a good firm, you know, father, head of the family, dude should. However, you know, he's very controlling. Then as we go along further, in his mind and probably his last thoughts were the betrayal, the axe in the head, but, you know, his own daughter. Like Lisa, I too believe that Lizzie did indeed do it. And the reason why I think that, just because it's logical, but back in those days, as we all know, policemen were squeamish about dealing with women. They never thought like a church-going woman like Lizzie would do this kind of thing. And so it was, you know, if this kind of case happened these days, would know it was her in the end. You know, plus would have the DNA and all that. But so the cards to me are revealing that kind of last final thought of how it was a family member who did kill him and was successful in killing him. And what I also find really intriguing are some other cards that I've pulled that, you know, a lot of swords are coming up, the betrayal card, the stabbed in the back card, you know, the family cards, the upside down, things going wrong, the depression, you know, we got wands there, which I see as the axe. I see there's cards indicating things just happening so fast. It was so fast. You know, didn't have time to think. You know, as we all believe, he was probably asleep or sick from the food poisoning and then taking a nap or you know, it was so hot that day. And what's completely fascinating to me about this read is the card Lisa pulled is the Emperor. Now, in the other years we've come to Lizzie Borden's house, the Emperor always comes up for Andrew. Even if we pull one card, it's usually the Emperor. Now, the Emperor does represent a very stern and strong man, someone who really enjoys being in control, someone who does have a fiery temper, but he's also one of those guys that's very charming and charismatic, and, you know, so being the pillar of the community and that sort of thing with the undercoat of the temper or the control issues. Now, Lisa, would you like to add anything? Would you like to give your interpretation of what you see for Andrew?
Well, first of all, I think it's pretty amazing that, you know, Sephora and I are tuning into this, and we got it very clearly. And I, as usual, I picked the overview card, and I got the Emperor, which is the father card. And we're all feeling very, very strong vibrations here. I see in the readings that Sephora has chosen, he has some isolation. But, you know, that card really, of all the cards that Sephora drew for him, that one is standing out the most for me, because Andrew was, by virtue of his personality, a very isolated, closed figure. So for me, that's the one, because she drew many cards for him. Clearly also got the, he's also got the Two of Pentacles, which is a big money issue card, and balancing money. It's also him holding onto money very closely and very tightly. And she's also got, that was the four, sorry, the four of pentacles, the two of pentacles reversed, which shows an imbalance in terms of his ability to be playful at all with money. But for me, like I said, he's also got the seven of swords, so there were some deceit issues. So Lizzie may not have been wrong if she surmised that he was trying to keep from her that he was going to sell the Swansea property, which was, as I mentioned earlier, the girl's beloved childhood farm where they visited. She may have been correct in assuming that that was a very much a guarded secret that they were trying to keep from her. Again, the card for me that stands out the most, in addition to Getting Me Ever, I couldn't believe it when I drew it. My cards are shuffled. I'm just picking randomly through the vibrations, honestly, that I am feeling. But the card that stands out for me is the Five of Cups. Also, interestingly enough, in the card, the deck, Sarah and I are using different decks. And the one that she's using, he's wearing a long black cape, and his face is even covered. That is also very interesting to me in terms of what the actual murder was, because, of course, they found his Prince Albert coat wadded up underneath him, and also his face is hidden. And, of course, Andrew's face was actually cleaved in half by the blows that Lizzie delivered. So I believe it's Lizzie. Not everyone agrees with me here, but in my personal opinion. So very interesting that of all the cards, and she has some other dark cards here, too. But that one is really jumping out at me and talking to me. So it was a bad day for Andrew.
Wow. Coming in this as a neophyte, I have to say this is absolutely fascinating. You know, I've seen the cards before. And what you have picked, and both of you, and this is consistent not only tonight, but at other visits, this keeps popping up. And these similar themes about the father, about his dominance, the financial things, the betrayal. This is quite interesting. And yes.
We've also got a Six of Cups, which usually represents a happy childhood. This is of the card that Sephora chose. And it usually represents nostalgia and longing. But the card is reversed, which means he absolutely knew that the household that he was creating was one that was not happy. It was not something that someone would look back on and have fond memories of. So the experience is partly reflecting his knowledge of Lizzie and Emma's experience of growing up in a household that was not warm, not comforting, not something that you'd look back and be, you know, happy memories of, like most of us hopefully have with our parents, whether it's a picnic or Sunday visits to family. So it's a very serious reading. And interestingly, too, Andrew, as much as he has such a rigid personality, he was, and also was so closed in, he was a fairly complicated person. And the cards absolutely reflect his complexity.
Hmm.
Very, very interesting. And thank you for letting me sit in for a little while, everybody. I'll hand it off.
Well, we're not done with you, Gardner.
Okay.
But we are joined now by Kara Kolya, and she's going to tell us about her first experience at the Lizzie House. Something very, very interesting happened. And Kara is married to, actually, Charles Kolya, a fantastic author. And so, Kara, can you tell us what happened that time?
Well, my first night here, my husband Charles and I stayed inside a room that was sometimes used by a couple of children. I don't remember if they were her niece and nephew or just the kids next door, but when I was calling home to check on my own children, I got the answering machine, and you know, there's that pause between the message and the beep. And in that pause, I heard little children giggling.
Oh.
So that gave me chills, even just talking about it now.
It was a dream story.
Right. And also, we have the fantastic Leanne Palmer. Wilbur? I'm sorry, you know what? I grew up with a Leanne Palmer. I'm sorry, Leanne. Leanne is the grand owner, caretaker, and decider of the Lizzie Borden House now. And she's been here for, how long have you been here, Leanne?
9 years.
9 years, okay. That's a long time. Long time to be dealing with a haunted dark house, I think. So, Leanne, in all this time, tell us, what's the most interesting or scariest thing that has happened here?
Well, I've had a few things happen to me over the past 9 years. Nothing terrifying, but a couple of things did drive me to sleep in my car twice. Let's see. My first week here, I was in the basement, and I had gone down to check on some laundry, and it felt like I walked into a walk-in freezer. And took a couple of steps forward, walked out of that sensation, and as soon as I did, I felt like somebody ran their finger down my back. So that was my welcome to the house.
And then, I mean, so is that what forced you to sleep in the car at first?
No, not that night. First night I slept in my car, I was sleeping alone in the house, and that was about 7 years ago. I had pulled the TV out to watch a movie. I was sleeping, I fell asleep on the sofa in the front parlor, and something woke me up around 3 a.m. And I had a clear view into the entryway. The only light on the entire in the entire house was the entryway light. It was an overhead lamp at the time. And as I'm lying there trying to get back to sleep, I'm looking at the foot of the staircase. I had a clear view of the banister, and I was trying to figure out what, you know, was casting shadows and where they were coming from. And as I'm looking at this one particular shadow at the foot of the staircase, it starts walking up the staircase.
Yeah.
And then all the bulbs blew out in the chandelier. So now I was alone in the house, alone in the dark. I calmly got off the sofa. I took my pillow, I took my blanket. I got my car keys. I just said to no one in particular, "You've been tonight," and I went and stepped in my car.
So, I mean, you've been commandeering this place and renting rooms for 9 years, and so, I mean, do you think that these spirits are angry, or what do you think about the spirits? I mean, do you think, first of all, that there are, in fact, spirits here?
Well, I know there's definitely something in the house. I don't think it's anything out to hurt anybody. They will mess with you once in a while, but nothing harmful is in the house.
Okay, you heard it from the owner, Leanne Wilbur. Not Palmer Wilbur. Okay, and Leanne, I hear about a rocking chair. I've heard about a story about a rocking chair. Can you tell us something about the rocking chair in this house, or what happened?
That was also a few years ago. I was sleeping up in Bridget's room on the third floor, which I had done many times. And this particular night, I just felt like I wasn't welcome on the third floor. And even to this day, I go to the third floor and it feels like I'm breathing in a high altitude. It's very, very heavy up there and hard to breathe for them. But this particular night, I chose to ignore that feeling, and I went to bed. And there is a small child's rocking chair to the left of Bridget's bed. And when I woke up in the morning, the rocking chair had shifted around to the right of the bed, and it was facing the bed like it was watching me sleep all night. So that bothered me a little bit.
Just a little bit? Leanne really does. I think that she's downplaying a lot of what happens here, and she's actually a very brave woman, because I don't think that I could live here. But you actually live. I mentioned earlier that you have a bedroom in the barn right now. Is that correct? I mean,
mm-hmm.
Okay. So obviously, You're not so comfortable with the spirits.
Oh, no. No, I'm fine with the spirits. I just, you know, if I can get away with not making my bed every morning, I do. When I sleep in the house, I have to make sure the bed's perfect every day. And, of course, if we have guests, then I've got to change the sheets as often as that. And I'm just like, no, I prefer to roll out of bed in the morning, let the cat keep sleeping, and just carry on with my day. I'll get to the bed later. But if I sleep in the house, everything has to be perfect.
Right. Hey, that's a good point, man. Maybe I'll move out to my bar. Okay, so Lisa and Sephra, you guys have pulled the cards for...
Lizzie.
Okay. And tell us what you've come up with for Lizzie. They've pulled the tarot cards on Lizzie.
And again, the spirits seem to be with us tonight. The cards I have here... Oh, hang on, my headphone is stuck in the thing here. Alrighty. This reading is mind-blowing once again. We have the Emperor has shown up again, that stern controlling father right beside the childhood card. Again, we have the Five of Cups, which was the hooded figure that Lisa mentioned in the earlier read. Again, we have the Lovers showing up. What's fascinating about this read, too, is Lizzie wanted the money. It's all money everywhere. She wanted security. She didn't want Abby to get what she felt was hers. And in her mind, she committed the judgment of eliminating the parents, so because of the miserable childhood and other things. And, with the judgment card, we pointing at the sword, Ace of Swords, too, which is the final card, which meant that she cut away all that family stuff and she was starting fresh, new beginning.
Literally cut it away.
We have swords. And interestingly enough, the Three of Wands has yet again appeared in the reading. And I think this is the third time we've seen this card tonight. And then, interestingly, Lisa's signifying card.
The first one I chose, like I actually took three this time, was the Eight of Wands, which shows a brand new beginning. And Lizzie had loved the fact that she had been in Europe and gone on the grand tour. She was actually even complaining on the boat when she was returning. She didn't want to return to the house. So for that card to come up, basically she was looking forward to a new life of adventure and excitement, possibly love. She had a very thwarted love life when she still lived here with Andrew and Abby. So obviously that card was looking forward to an acquittal and encountering a much more sanguine life for herself. For the heck of it, I just drew two more to see what might come up. What I got is Ten of Swords. It's a very interesting card. In my deck, I use the Mythic Tarot, and Sephra uses the Rider White deck. But in mine, Orestes is lying there, and there are three harpies sort of in the background. The Ten of Swords is a very final card. It's actually in some ways much nastier than the Death card because it's a final ending, but it also shows being stabbed in the back. Very interesting. Almost the cards I'm seeing here too are almost like a literal translation of what actually happened, in addition to the figurative meanings, of course, but with an Ace of Swords that Sephra drew, you can't get much closer than an axe and that. And I've got the Ten of Swords, and that ending is again it confirms exactly what Sephra got, because the card I picked after that was the Ace of Pentacles, which is a new beginning and new money. So in her mind, those two were so clearly linked that the end of her parents' existence, or her step mother, indicated the beginning of new money and inheritance. Well, Sephra also got the Wall Street card, which is the Ten of Pentacles, which shows that again she was so optimistic about what her financial status would be afterwards. And indeed it was. She hated actually living in this neighborhood. Part of the reason why she had difficulty meeting people in her social class was because the Bordens actually had much more money than people that were in the general area, yet she couldn't really attract people of the better class because of where she lived. So she, in fact, moved to what was called the Hill in Fall River, which was a much richer and classier part of town. And indeed, she did. She bought a house on French Street, a Queen Anne style, which there are pictures of it on the internet. It's a really lovely house. Had lots of bathrooms, as opposed to what the house was like when she lived here then, where there was only a, you know, a tap sink off the kitchen and a how do you call it? Not really an outhouse. Well, they did have that too, but the cellar, like water closet.
Privy.
Yeah, privy. So it's very interesting that, I mean, that ending for her became a beginning of a new liberty and a new and a period of optimism. And pretty much, except for the fact that, of course, while the town people supported her and were glad that she was acquitted, after that she was pretty much shunned. So she often frequently traveled to Providence and to Boston, and that's where she mostly sought making new friends rather than, you know, local acquaintances. But on the whole, I'd say she was pretty glad afterwards that it all worked out.
And what I also find interesting is we've already had tonight the Ten of Swords and the Eight of Wands. And we talked earlier, too, about how the Eight of Wands mentioned it was like a very quick thing. It was almost like, okay, I know I'm getting out of this mess, and she just, like, went for it. And I find it interesting, too, the Ten of Pentacles, which you call the Wall Street card, is the card that's right on her heart, which was the whole, it represents the whole essence of who she is. So the money, the security, the all that stuff. I got chills reading this.
Can you guys explain, now both of you, during the break, both of you commented that you didn't feel well, you were a little bit nauseous. Tell us a little bit about why that might happen when there's something paranormal happening.
Well, as Sephra mentioned too, it's, you know, we're almost upon the full moon, so things tend to be more active. And there are many times we come to the house and we just pick up immediately that something's going on. It's hard to explain if you haven't experienced it yourself. Leanne sort of gave a bit of a description of it too when she said when she goes up to the third floor, it felt like it's very difficult to breathe. It's heavy. I've had that experience here too, but well, Sephra and I were, and I believe Gardner's going to mention something about it too, he's feeling the same way. All of us are nauseated. All of us feel like it's almost like you're being rocking a little bit. You're disoriented a bit, and it's actually quite an uncomfortable feeling. So it once again, it's nothing that any of us have eaten. It's nothing that there's absolutely nothing different about the house, which we've been here for about 10, 12 years. We've been coming, and but the vibrations are very, very strong, and they're very definite. It's really, if you've never experienced it psychically, the closest thing would be like right before you're going to be ill and you have the flu, the way that you feel disoriented, you feel slightly fuzzy, you feel as if you're going to be sick, and it hasn't quite had sort of like what we used to call the prodromal symptoms. That's what we're experiencing, and there's no getting away from it.
And what's interesting, yeah, that I find the many times I come here is as the night goes on and these feelings ebb and flow, I think you've become kind of acclimatized to it, because once you're actually away from this place, you realize how screwed up you really were while you were here.
But tonight so far, for me at least, it's been very constant. When I got here, the rest of the crew went to dinner, and we were at a conference last night, and I didn't get much sleep, so I skipped dinner and took a nap in Lizzie's bedroom, by the way. And for the minute I was fine when I lay down, the minute I woke up, I was immediately nauseated. So, and then the house is beautiful and clean, so it's absolutely the vibration. And Gardner also has something to share too, because he's experiencing the same thing.
Yeah.
Wow.
Also very strongly.
Wow.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. Just to mention. Yeah. Sound effects. Yeah, it goes along perfectly with what you're all saying here, which is that. When I walked in the house, I started immediately feeling nauseous, and in fact, that's why I had to leave. I had to go to the bathroom just by myself, try to get a drink of water, and every time I walk around, I can feel the hairs on my arms. It's just like, you know, I feel like a woolly mammoth out here. Like,
I can definitely see your arm hair raised.
Yeah,
yeah,
definitely.
Absolutely.
And I'd like to say it's simply because I'm in the presence of you fine ladies. I tell you, I'm not that much of a rogue. I am a rogue, but I'm not that bad. So there you go. But anyway, yeah, and it's a peculiar experience, and I don't, you know, I've been exposed to the tarot a couple times, and I know someone who is good with cards, and she's learning, and I wish I could have told her about the show before, and I would love for her to be able to listen to this right now. This is
awesome. Just before you tell that story, while you were talking about your hair raising, I pulled the devil card.
What does that mean?
We do have some dark presences here. The devil doesn't necessarily mean the devil himself, a demon, but it's strong, controlling people, firm people, people who are, murderers and such. So we have some here amongst our midst.
I've been thinking about getting rid of the shirt.
He's wearing a Ouija board shirt.
and the thing about it is it mocks the Ouija. You know, it's this website thing that I do, and we've taken a lot of the conspiratorial Illuminati imagery and replaced it with our own anarchist political stuff, just to poke fun at the conspiracy, because it's just the title of this thing. And so I'm actually thinking about going out to my car and getting another shirt.
I personally am not comfortable with a Ouija board under any circumstances, because I do know from experience and from other things that I've read a great deal about, the Ouija can definitely be a portal to open things, and you don't always know what you're inviting in. So while there is an antique Ouija board here that's quite lovely to look at,
I personally will not touch it, especially not
on a night like this. Personally would not even be interested at all.
And you know, Lisa, the thing about it was I figured, okay, look, I'm an independent mover. I am my own guy. I am a physical entity. I control my own fate.
K2 meters blinking.
Okay. And so I sort of wore this as a way to like tweak any sort of, you know, malevolence or anything like that that would be coming in. But you know what? Better safe than sorry. Yeah. You know.
We really didn't need that extra boost.
I'm learning from the experts here. The ladies know. So I will go out and change my shirt and come back.
Yeah, I'm thinking
you'll
feel better when you got a different shirt on.
Wisely.
You certainly will.
All right, I'll come back. Thank you.
I
wish you
could just take off your shirt and stay here. You know, we have no problem with that.
All right, we're going to take a very long break. No, just kidding. I guess we've got something going on. Okay. Yeah, go ahead. I'm going to change into a psychedelic first shirt.
Oh, good. Oh, I thought you were going to say psychedelic shirt.
Yeah, really.
Okay, so, you know, this has been very interesting, and the energy is high tonight at the Lizzie Borden House, according to Sephra and Lisa, and actually Leanne, too. So it's pretty interesting, you guys. We're going to take a one-minute break, and we'll be right back.
Oh, take it out, we're dropping it in. Get out of here, that's good.
I know.
Visit purpleplates.com today. For over 40 years, the Purple Energy Plates have been delivering amazing results for their many customers. Inspired by the great genius Nikola Tesla, the harmony, healing, and energetic effects of the plates have proven over and over to be beneficial and often miraculous to thousands of customers. With their money-back guarantee and the many benefits, how can you afford not to get one? Check their site for daily specials and choose from their many energy products. You won't be sorry. Visit them today at purpleplates.com for mind, body, and spirit. And expect a miracle.
Okay, we are back, and we are with Lisa Minetti and Sephra Jerome. And so I'm just going to ask, Sephra, your way of reading the tarot cards is, like, really interesting to me. Is there anything else that we can ask the cards? And if you guys have a question out there listening, 818-369-0327, and you got a question about Lizzie or what happened here, please let us know. Meanwhile, Sephra is going to give us some other view on the way she reads cards and what you're feeling right now.
Well, certainly, you know, we're all kind of giggling about the Ouija board shirt, but he certainly has gone to change it. I think that is drawing some, you know, we're in Andrew's room. We don't need a Ouija board in here. Now, what's interesting to me with the nausea thing is I get it when I come here. It's a different nausea than, you know, food poisoning or upset stomach or hangover. And I haven't had a stomach ache all week, or, you know, or actually for a very, very, very long time, despite, you know, the fact that I just came from a conference and all. But the minute I walked through the door here, I had the stomach ache. Now, what this has to do with reading tarot, really, a lot of times when we choose what words we're going to use to interpret the cards for you, we use our gut feelings, right? And so I think because we're working from our solar plexus in a haunted house, that's why we are experiencing the nausea, whether you're a skeptic or whether you believe. And, that, and you know, that's what's frightening, too, when you're a skeptic, as I was before the first time I came here. It was that punch in the gut nausea that you get. And, you know, the, as we mentioned earlier, the flowered wallpaper doesn't help because it does make you dizzy. So when I'm reading the cards, I do a combination of the logical, because I am an Aquarius, so I tend to work from the logical brain, you know, mathematical kind of ideas.
Wait a minute, I'm an Aquarian and I'm totally illogical.
Well, you see, I have the Virgo moon, which helps ground me, right?
Okay.
So, yeah. And, you know, as with any sign, it's the combination of your planets and that sort of thing. So I find that I enjoyed learning tarot in a class, learning specifically what each number, each symbol, and so on meant, the story behind each particular card, why it was created, where it fits in the fool's journey, and that sort of thing. So when I'm reading the cards, I draw upon the practical information, the colors, you know, the religious symbolism and so on. And then I also draw in what my gut is telling me. Sometimes I look at the cards and my mouth just starts saying stuff that my logical brain doesn't quite see, but my mouth is saying something that my gut sees. And when that happens, which I can't make it happen or anything, that seems to be when I'm the most accurate. And what with the tarot, it's like Reiki or anything else. The tarot reader is just the vessel. The cards are the cards. The reader interprets them. But ultimately, the person they're reading for has to interpret the cards for themselves. So sometimes the tarot reader will ask you, you know, because they want to make sure they're on the right track. Because we may see things irrelevant to the question you've asked, so we want to make sure that we're on the right track. And often that's the more interesting read because, you know, the person you're reading will be surprised that you're going down this road that is irrelevant, but irrelevant to the question, but totally relevant to their life, and almost like the question that they were really trying to ask but were too afraid to. And that's one of the more fascinating things for me when that happens in a reading. And Lisa, how do you read?
Well, I've been reading for about maybe 25 years or so. Actually, I learned initially because I was writing a book about gypsies, and so I thought it would be a great way to learn some background. As it turned out, there were no tarot card readings in that book, but I left with a great... I found out how intuitive they are, and interestingly, too, the one thing that people that may not be familiar should be aware of is that in some ways, they operate like dreams because they're based on archetypes, you know. So that just as we might dream of a father, we dream of a house, we dream, they very much operate on that level of symbology. And interesting, while Zephyr was speaking, I decided to cut the deck. And sometimes I'll, you know, I do a very specific reading like Zephyr, but like I said, I don't do private clients anymore. I just do it for people that I know that, you know, want some guidance. But I just thought I'd pick two cards and actually just split the deck and see what I came up with. And interestingly, again, we're once again confirmed with what we are experiencing, what Zephyr was actually just speaking about. We've got the Magician, which is showing great power and showing, you know, sort of magical things happening around us. And the card that was opposite is Death. So the cards, once again, no matter, it's almost like we can't make mistakes tonight.
Truly, really.
Because, like, as Zephyr said, we are just a vessel, but there are reasons that certain cards are chosen and the way things happen. And it's very much keeping in sync and confirming it. Not only what we're feeling, but what's actually going on. So, but yeah, I, I tend to do one particular reading more than others. I love when Sephora reads for me and she does a chakra reading or a heart reading. I find them really, really illuminating, especially since I do a different spread. And I think Sephora also mentioned it. It's not only the cards each have at least 50 or 60 meanings, but it's not only just the meaning of that card. It's in relation to the other cards, and it's also in the context of where, when you do a spread, it just, if it's assigned, as she was mentioning before, a heart energy or that kind of thing, depending on what type of reading you're doing. So you always are also interpreting the cards in relation to that spot and in relation to the others and to an overall reading. They're very complex and very, very fascinating. And I've always found them extremely accurate. So much so that actually, when I was really young, someone gave me a deck when I was in high school, and it actually frightened me so much I got rid of it.
Mm.
So then it was years later when I picked it up, because as a 15 or 16 year old, I really could not handle what was happening. It was too upsetting for me. So
mm-hmm.
I find that fascinating that and actually I knew before, that you were afraid of tarot cards too. And now this is what we do. Because
yeah.
I was terrified of it until I was in my mid-30s. And it's very interesting. So it's like the magnets, the repulsion, or maybe we were just waiting till we were ready to be mature enough to
handle it.
And what I'm also finding interesting now is we're sitting here live from the Lizzie Borden house. And when I came here, this house was freezing cold, and I had to put on my hoodie and pants. And let me tell you, here in Rhode Island, no, we're in Massachusetts now, but I've been in Rhode Island all weekend,
mm-hmm.
and I've been running around in practically my underwear because it's so friggin' hot. And now, I came here, and I was freezing. And as the show is progressing, I'm taking my clothes off because I'm so hot. And I'm nauseous. I'm hot. My eyes are blurring. I'm having a hard time focusing and forming my thoughts now, which often happens to me here. I start speaking gibberish halfway through, especially when we're interacting with the tarot card. But, and I know it's not the question, but I'm just giving you an example of what's happening as we're sitting here live tonight.
And I'm getting warmer
and
warmer too. I'm getting warm.
Yeah, are you?
Yeah.
I did turn off that freezing cold thing, but
you better go get a barf bucket.
My skin is cold. Yeah.
Yeah.
My skin is cold, but I'm actually very warm. I feel like I'm flushed. Like,
yeah,
like,
am I cold too?
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like I'm flushed, like when you have a fever.
Yeah,
you know,
it's like a hot flash, but it's not.
Yeah.
Because it's different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's...
And like, I'm so hot now, I just want to take... I'm practically, I'm back to the tiny little clothes I was wearing earlier, like all weekend, and I'm sweating to death. And it's because the energy is so high in here tonight.
Like I said, my skin is actually cold to the touch. But
my skin is cold, Lisa's skin is cold, yet we're sweating.
But we're sweating.
And this often happens to us here, here in the house. All the strange... feeling, the hot and the cold, and certainly you can put some of it down to air conditioning, climate change, the wind and all that, as a skeptic would. But I think once you yourself are actually here in this house and sort of understand how it works and how the city works and the climate, you do understand it's a very strange and unusual kind of sensation that we feel here. I'm feeling more of the thickness now as we sit here in Andrew's room. I know he's here. I have the hair on my arms. He is here. And, Andrew, we're grateful for you to be here because, I've spent the last few years wanting to come here and hang out in your room again because I do find your home very interesting. And certainly I do want to discover what really happened. Lisa and I both are on the same page about, we think it's Lizzie. And I don't even know if that matters anymore. I just find the energy in this house is very unique and interesting to me. And it's getting worse. Are we almost at midnight yet? Is that clock going to go off?
No, but often when we come here, no one really gets any sleep. At least I usually don't.
No.
I just stay up and... hang out in the outside of the house,
really?
And whatever. It's cool, but if you are into the paranormal and supernatural, you definitely want to get here one day. But as Sephora was saying, Ouija boards and whatnot, they're nothing to play around with. And we've heard many stories, of course, horror stories about Ouija boards and gone wrong and, you know, gone wild and, and all that. But so if you guys went outside and got some air, if you're outside the house, you're still not. Are you still sick?
Yes.
You're still sick outside the house.
Yes.
Okay.
It won't dissipate probably.
Till we leave. Oh Lord.
It will be gradual as we drive away more and more.
Right.
And I frequently. Lizzie's childhood home was in Swansea, which a few of us have gone and seen the outside of. And I frequently will be just chit-chatting away in the car if I'm with someone else or singing along with the radio. And all of a sudden, about 10 miles from here, I'll get another horrendous wave of nausea and the same thing I'm experiencing. And invariably, I look and I see the sign, it's for Swansea. So
Right.
After that, it will dissipate. Although, as I've said, I have had the experience where things have sort of followed me home. And it's kind of strange when that happens.
Right.
I actually have a ton of things following me home. one of the years we came, they were doing renovations here at the Lizzie Borden home, and there was a big pile of rubble outside. And I asked the owner if I could take a little piece of wood from the window frame, the original window frame when they rebuilt the side of the house. And she said I could, because obviously I did not want to steal anything from this place. No way, man. I wouldn't even take a pebble from the driveway, you know? Yeah, that basement story was bad enough. Oh, man, we were so terrified of that basement.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I took this piece of wood home, and I always kept it where I could see it on my desk. And then I had to move. So I packed up all my stuff, and I moved from a house to an apartment. And I thought I'd put all my office stuff into storage. And, I was unpacking and building my desk and stuff. And I was sitting on my computer one night going, I wonder where I put that piece of Lizzie Borden wood. I guess it's buried in storage. It's sort of like to know where it is.
Yeah.
And, oh, my God. My foot moved, and I kicked it, and somehow it was under my foot, under my desk.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And now it's on my desk where I can always see it.
I tell a story about the time with the bird feathers on the graves and everything.
Yeah, you tell that story.
No, you remember it better than I do.
No, I don't. Well, my brain's going.
We kept encountering bird feathers everywhere.
Yeah, it was weird.
And they just seemed to be kind of...
I can't remember. There was a connection.
There was, but and I can't remember exactly what it was. But anyway, the thing that was very odd was it doesn't matter. When we went to the site of Lizzie Borden's grave, we actually found more feathers. And I actually still have one in a little box that... and I know where mine is, too. I was like... I don't often touch it or pick it up because as soon as I do, it's almost like what people would describe as like a haunted object. I mean, I can't even explain it. You feel this like instant, like electrical shock in your hand. So we kept our feathers. I don't really ever touch mine, but I know it's there. And it's,
I actually didn't keep my feathers because they terrified me.
See? Mm-hmm. I gotta say, what the hell, collecting haunted objects, you know? I don't know about that, man. I mean, leave it be. Let it be. Gonna take 2-minute break. You guys will be right.
Skeleton leaves. But on the other hand, there were the leaves. Mrs. Darling examined them very carefully. They were skeleton leaves. But she was sure they did not come from any tree that grew in England. J.M. Barrie, Peter Pan. Move on, they say, but where shall I go? I try to fall into another. He kneels at my feet, worships the hem of my dress, tells me I am the most beautiful girl he has ever held. He crushes my ribs. when he holds me. He leaves bruises on my throat when he kisses me, shaped like islands in the middle of the ocean, with only wild animals as inhabitants. His passion hurts me. He's not you. Someone gave me the gift of frankincense and myrrh today. Holy chapel in winter, where the weary come to pray, to get down on their knees in genuflection. All the white 7-day candles swaying back and forth with the breath of prayer. I dream I'm following a coffin, a simple pine box. Awful sounds come from it, sounds of sorrow and fear. The deer have come for the apples at the edge of the woods, graceful as ballerinas when they move through the trees. Skeleton leaves swirl and dance all day long. I have done everything right. I have done everything wrong.
That was a poem by Corinne De Winter. Also happens to be me. I really like that poem. We have a very, very, very special guest here. And she actually needs no introduction. She is the fabulous Heather Graham. You might have heard of her from her 9 million books on the New York Times bestseller list. Heather, how are you?
I'm good, thank you, and if only. 9 million would be quite nice.
Well, she writes like 75 books a year, so she's headed there pretty quickly. Okay, so Heather often joins us at the Lizzie Borden House every July. And Heather, tell us, what was the most interesting thing that happened to you here, the most haunting thing?
Oi, I should have known you were going to ask that. That would have been the logical question. I'm trying to think. Well, I know that we stay in the, Dennis and I stay in the murder room. The first night when we came, I thought, oh, this is cool. I can't wait to do it. And then I wound up staying awake until 5 a.m. because I was afraid to go to bed. And then I did go to bed. Oh, I know the most interesting thing, too, though, is last year when we did film here, when my daughter played Lizzie, and she got to murder me with the hatchet as Abby, and then she murdered Dennis Cummings. It was really interesting, too, because I got a whole new spin on things that I was afraid of when they were filming, and it was really cute because they filmed for about 30 minutes, and then the cameraman stopped because he borrowed Leanne's hatchet, and the hatchet had a great big welcome written on it.
Right.
It was interesting for Lizzie to do that. As far as scary, I think, first of all, I'm a total coward, and I'm fine when I'm with all of you, and I was afraid for them to leave upstairs when I had to go to the restroom just 5 minutes ago.
Right.
Hey, I know that one.
Yep. Yeah, I think it's first of all, Leanne has done this house over beautifully. It's just incredible what detail has gone into it. The house is just wonderful. And then I know it scares me the worst too. The mannequin.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah.
I think it was last time we were here, the year before, I'd been going to stay in one half of the house and wound up staying in the other because I was with my daughters, and they wanted something, and it was very, very late at night, and I was like, I'm okay, I can run over and get it, even though everyone was in bed. So I ran down the one set of steps, went through the house, and up to next, walking by the mannequins with my hands in front of me, like, I'm not looking at you, don't move, don't do anything, because I'm not watching. And I grabbed the computer, and then when I got back, I found out that there weren't any disks in the computer, which meant go all the way back again. And this time, our friend Dennis Cummings, who's usually in the parlor, he'd closed off the doors, because before they'd been open, and I could say, hi, Dennis, and yes, I'm running by the mannequin. And I'm like, oh, he's trying to be polite by closing the door, and now I'm really scared to walk through here. But it was fine. I did it, and I just, run by the mannequins as quickly as I can.
Right.
So what's your take on the house, by the way?
Well, these guys are saying that they're getting nauseous, and I believe that they are. I'm not quite so sensitive to the supernatural vibes in here, I guess. You know, whatever, man. I'm just not... I'm just an uncaring, unfeeling woman.
It's like Lizzie.
No. Yeah. I just don't have that about me. But Heather, I have scheduled you to be on my show as an interview, and I've been postponing it and postponing it and postponing it. But I hope to have Heather on to interview her about her work and her 9 million books. And although we're going to need about 16 hours to talk about.
If only, no, there are not 9 million books.
You're right, only 80 million.
But there is one based on Lindsay's, and I'm trying to remember what the
title
was.
Oh, yeah,
was.
What
yeah,
is that?
I can't remember. No, I think I think it was the year of The Unholy. I'm trying to remember, but it's, I can't remember right now. It might have been The Unholy, or, yeah, maybe. But it moves up to Salem. Massachusetts instead of Fall River, but definitely based on Lizzie's house. And then for one of the anthologies that we did, and I'm trying to remember, it was for a charity, but I did do a story on the mannequin coming to life in the house.
Oh, see?
So I hope they're not going to like get even with me. Like
yeah, they're going to be like, you misrepresented us, bitch. We're going to freaking screw you up.
Yeah, they seriously, do you walk by them and just...
Well, they're a little scary, I reckon. You know what I mean? I guess they are, you know? They are.
Yeah, good. Actually, there is a wonderful clip on YouTube about people that did a setup where mannequins do indeed come to life.
Oh.
And I'm really hoping that these don't, because... I think that I think I might have a heart attack. So.
I know I would.
Lisa said that the mannequin moved on her, and it
several times.
Yeah, several times. That's a little creepy. You know what? Well, it's got Lizzie. Oh no, that was the remake of her dress. But no, is that her real dress when she was 17?
No, it's
from the show.
It's from the movie.
Everything's from the movie because I thought there was an original
one. The other
two
are just period pieces.
Okay, so we've got Rick here, and Rick. Heather, thank you so much.
Thank right. you.
You
and,
rock.
And, you know, I'm just wondering how many of us are actually going to sleep tonight. But
I never do.
It's cool right now because there are seven or eight of us in this room. It's great.
You're going to have
I'm not afraid of anything.
And we have Rick. Rick is a caretaker here. And he actually just
tour
did
guide.
The tour. A tour guide. I'm sorry. He's a tour guide here. And he just gave a tour with the rest of the writers here. And, Rick, I hope you don't mind me saying, Rick's wife is Robin, who was on, actually, the Lizzie Borden episode on the Paranormal Syndicate. And if you guys look that up on YouTube, Heather's on it. Heather's daughter plays Lizzie. Dennis is a corpse. He plays a really great dead guy. And, but also, Robin is interviewed in that segment. Now, tell us, your wife has been working here, too. What did she do? Because I couldn't believe that you told me earlier in the parking lot.
Oh, refresh my memory. She's done so many things.
The vortex in the bedroom?
Oh, yeah.
Whoa!
That's really nothing to do with the Lizzie Borden house, but we actually had a problem in our bedroom. She was having trouble sleeping in there.
I bet, right?
Yeah, well, it turned out that we had someone come in and you know, bless the house and do the staging and all that. And when they went into our bedroom, they said, what the heck is going on in here? Which I said, not much goes on here. But anyway, there were mirrors. She had my wife had the bedroom arranged where there was a mirror at the headboard and a mirror at the vanity. They crisscrossed each other. And we had two other mirrors on the walls, and it created what they said was a vortex. That's why she was having trouble sleeping. So.
Oh.
Yeah. Another interesting thing that happened one night is that my wife came back from giving tours during the day, and she doesn't tell me this, but all of a sudden we're sitting there, and this is the winter time. All of a sudden the ceiling fan starts going off and it's at high speed. I said, what the heck caused that? And she says to me, oh, I'm sorry, but today when I was leaving, I said, well, Mrs. Borden, if you're bored here, you can come home with me. I said, well, really? You better make sure she said take her back with you tomorrow.
Now, Rick, what the hell? Who invites the Bordens to come home with them?
My wife.
Oh, my God. I think the vortex was the least of your worries.
Yeah, you may be right there. But my wife has been giving tours here for 6 years, and she's had so many experiences. She's seen the Shadow Man, and she's been violently yelled by Mr. Borden. Most of the time when anybody gets nauseous in the house, that's usually Mr. Borden's M.O. He causes that kind of thing to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But you people have been great. I've enjoyed being here. And I'm going to sleep well tonight because I'm going home.
Yeah, you're going home, except there's a vortex in your bedroom.
Not anymore. Not anymore.
And Andrew might be hanging out there still, too. Now, he pissed off you. No, your wife pissed Andrew off. But she did totally diss him or whatever, you know, however you want to term it.
Right.
So what did you see happen to her? I mean, have you seen anything happen to her?
Only her experience here at the house where she was given tours, and every day she'd come into his room and she'd get sicker and sicker. By the end of the week, she was almost violently sick from giving the tours, and she came home and told me about it. I said, well, maybe the best thing to do is just go apologize to him. So the next day she came to the house and she apologized to his picture, and she apologized in every single room. And when she gets to his bedroom, she really apologized to him and praising him for being the savior of all of her, so to speak. You know? So she did it up, and it seems to work because he hasn't bothered her in that way too much anymore.
Well, that's because she asked him to come live in your house.
No, she asked for it. not him, hopefully not him.
No. Oh, I thought it was him and Abby. Okay, listen, you guys, thanks for joining us, and thank you, Sephora Jerome. You guys check out Sephora and get a reading from her. See the information on the show page. Thank you, Lisa Minetti. Lisa's too busy actually to do any readings, but Sephora is a phenomenal reader. In fact, I'm going to get a reading when we end this show. Thank you, Beth Blue, Gardner, Heather Graham, and Rick, Dennis Cummins.
Leanne,
sure. Wilbur, not Palmer.
Kara Collier,
that's right. And thanks for listening to the show. Check out Sephora, and we're going to have Sephora on again to do some reading. And you guys take care and take care of each other. Thank you.
That was so much fun.
And was the last...